Hey, I'm Andy Chanley from 88.5 FM, and welcome to an 88.5 Live in the Studio, my first Live in the Studio in quite some time, in a couple of years. And I'm excited that it is Jamie Drake joining us here today. How are you, Jamie?
Oh my gosh, I'm the first Live in a couple of years.
Mine, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah, there was a pandemic and cancer and COVID and all kinds of things in between the and so finally making it back here. We'll get to it in just a second, okay. But there's a fun story and there's a circle to be closed in you being back with us today. But I want to get some business out of the way right at the top. A new album is called New Girl. Buy it wherever you buy music. It's really a fine, fine record, and you expect that from Jamie these days. Follow-up to 2019's Everything's Fine, where we played Redwood Tree, and she performed a number of songs here that you can go and find in the archives at 88.5fm.org. And also, with the new album, New Girl, a crowd-funded vinyl record that people can go to jamiedrakemusic.com now and pre-order. Yeah. And this is the kind of record that you want on vinyl. And we'll talk more about that, too, as we go through these songs today. And she's going to perform three songs today with Austin in just a moment. But we had you perform here at the studio in, was it 2019, I guess it was, late 2019? Yeah. And then in early 2020, March of 2020, we asked you to come and perform for World Cafe.
Yes.
Their sense of place when they came to Los Angeles. You were on a bill with Liz Phair in Koreatown at this club called Kiss Kiss. And it just seems like a lifetime ago.
It was. It really was.
That happened. And now you're back with us here in studio. Tell us everything that's happened between then and now.
Well, that was literally my last show. It was, I think, March 2nd or 3rd. That was my last show before everything happened. And I had come off of a tour that I was on, and I had rented out my apartment in Silver Lake to someone on Airbnb because I was touring all of February. And near the end of February, I looked at the reservation, and it said that they were there until March 31st. Not March 1st. And I was like, I remember laughing and saying, well, I guess I'm going on an adventure. And then I came back, voted, had the show with you guys. And when I got to LA, it's like, I've always been the sort of blissfully unaware type of person who's just like believing life is just I'm on this magical journey. And so when I got back, everyone was talking about coronavirus and freaking out and then using sanitizer. And I was like, don't put bad juju on my show, okay? Like, good things are happening in my music life right now and in general. So please don't make weird things happen. But then lo and behold, you know, like by March 13th, I was basically homeless. I was like helping my guitarist at the time. I was like house sitting for his mom while she was away from work and watching her dog, because I just kind of rolled with it and figured it out. And then she was sent back from work, and I love her, but we can't live together. And then coronavirus happened. I remember that weekend. It was March 13th, which was also very strange because I put out a duet that I sang with my friend Justin Wade Tam from Nashville called Calm Yourself Down. And it released on March 13th, which was literally the day that felt like the world was ending. And this beautiful song that he had written that I sang on was called Calm Yourself Down. And it was just like this weird, it was so interesting. So from there, basically, the person who was renting my apartment freaked out basically and was just like, can I please keep renting your place? He was from New York City. He didn't want to go back there, obviously.
Right.
And I didn't want to be in my apartment, to be honest. I had this very intuitive notion that I just really didn't want to be stuck in my apartment in the city without nature. And so my immediate response that weekend was to reach out to some folks that I had stayed with in their Airstream in Upper Ojai.
Nice.
Like out in the country. And I reached out to them immediately and was just like, can I stay and can I rent your place? And I had to wait a little bit. And in the meantime, I needed to get out of my friend's mom's house because we were making each other crazy. And I was like, I might accidentally kill her. You know, like, I don't want to be stuck somewhere with right. her and then maybe kill her. So because we didn't know anything.
Right.
And so I was just like, okay, now I'm just going to trust that I'm going to be taken care of. So that first weekend I left, some friends of mine were like, you can stay. They had a guest house, but they were like, well, I'm actually sick. So we're separated and he's in the guest house. And they're like, but you can stay in our, we have a really nice office in Hollywood. And I was like, okay, that was just the first thing that I looked into. I ended up sleeping on a couch with my dog in their really nice office. It was like a New York apartment, but like weirdly was able to sleep on a couch because I have sleeping problems. And that was like just the strangest weekend of my life. Sleeping on this couch over that weekend. And then finally I had a friend that was like, you can stay in our basement apartment for a few days before I was able to go up to Ojai. Because I was waiting for them to give me like the go ahead and the actual date that I could be there. And so I just felt like, okay, I felt like I was A, renting my apartment out by accident for the month of March when a pandemic happened to happen. Like, I've never done that before. I've Airbnb'd my place for like 9 years now whenever I'm traveling. I've never made the quote unquote mistake of approving a reservation for longer than I had thought. Right. And the fact that that happened was just like this providence type of thing for me because, what, you know, I ended up being taken out of the city and into the country. And
what a beautiful place. There's something about Ojai. That yeah. valley, I swear, I don't feel it many places, but when I go there, we love it because there's an energy in that valley. I can't put my finger on it, but there's like an electricity to it. There's something about being in Ojai that's magical.
It's true. I mean, they say it's because the mountains go from, I think, east to west, and or maybe I don't remember actually, but there's only 7 mountain ranges in the world that do that, and those mountain ranges, because the sun sets over them a different way,
yeah.
makes them like this different. It brings a different energy to it.
Yeah.
And one of the nicknames for Ojai is called the Nest, actually. So I felt like I had been taken into this little nest, and I was there for 9 months. So that's a whole gestation period, right? So that ended up being like a really providential thing as well, because while I was in Ojai, I discovered this recovery program called ACA, which stands for Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Families. I'd never heard of it, but apparently it is like the graduation program for all 12-step. So if you struggle and you're in AA or Al-Anon or whatever it may be, like ACA is like actually the root of it, which is basically to discover your inner child and reparent yourself, you know, and basically learn how to love yourself the way that you had not been loved. So when I was in Ojai, I had this gestation period of like going back into this nest and being in nature. And it was lonely because of the pandemic, but it was also one of the most beautiful experiences that came out of this crazy, tragic thing that was happening in the world. I felt so taken care of. It was unbelievable.
Well, and ironically, some pretty cheery music came out of this. You're going to do 3 songs for us. The first one you're mm-hmm. going to do is the title cut, New Girl. And it has a this bossa nova, South American feel to it. How did that end up coming about?
Well, I just love this because this is like a perfect time to talk about it too, because when I was in Ojai, the music that I was really just drawn to that brought me this feeling of like easy breezy kind of feeling was this bossa nova music. You know, and I've listened to bossa before, but I'd never in my life been attracted to it in such a big way. And the specific record that really, like, it's like I discovered it, but it's older than I am, which is really funny. It's literally called 76, and it's a João Gilberto Stan Getz album. Yeah. And I listened to it on repeat throughout that year. And, you know, I don't know what they're saying, but it's beautiful. And the feeling of it just made me feel so at ease. I felt taken care of. So I was listening to this music nonstop. I bought myself a bicycle, put a basket on it, had a JBL speaker, you know, rode around with my dog in the basket and the music, and I'm riding around Miners Oaks in this bicycle and just like listening to this record, like on repeat, looking at the stars, asking the universe, like, what is going on and how am I going to make it through this time? Like, this is insane. And, but the music, it just brought me so much hope. And so by the time by the next May, I met Rich Jacks and we wrote It's a New Life. I guess that would be a good thing to talk about for the next song. But New Girl is, it has this bossa vibe, and I'd written that a couple of years before the pandemic actually started. And New Girl, it's like, I grew up in a very kind of chaotic atmosphere, and we moved around so much when I was a kid. I went to 9 different elementary schools before the 5th grade.
Wow.
And there was just no stability at home, or just, and home was always moving. I guess it kind of makes sense that I'm now an artist that feels at home when I'm on the road. New Girl, that was the first experience I think I had where it's like my inner child wrote the song, you know, like I was having these different memories. And if you listen to the lyrics in each of the verses,
it's spoken from your point of view at those ages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like when I'm 8 years old and 10 years old, and I could have wrote so many verses for this song, but you know, it's 8, 10, and 30 because I, you know, at 8 years old, you know, I wrote about the things that happened then. And in 10 years old, I'm like looking, I remember having this memory of looking down at my legs and seeing that I had hairy legs. And I didn't realize that. And it was like this weird thing for the first time to realize. And it's kind of a funny lyric, but I wanted to put it in there because it's really true to like my experience and my memory. And I'm, and then, you know, and then the last verse about being 30 and the changes that I go through as an adult, I'm still the new girl. So it's like, I'm always the new girl at school, and that's like, but I'm always the new girl because I'm always evolving and changing in life. And that's, basically the overarching message in that song and just the whole album. It's right. About being the new girl.
Let's have a listen to this. This is Jamie Drake and New Girl on 88.5 FM.
Standing out on the bus stop, trying not to feel cold. Going into the first grade at another new school. I am only 8 years old and I just lost my friends. Oh, way back in Florida, for these Ozark Mountains, I'm always the new new girl, a new girl. way it's always been. It's like I'm trying somehow to never quite fit in. I'm only 30 and I just lost my faith. I'm opening like a flower, more exposed to the pain. I'm always the new girl, new girl, always the new girl, new girl. I am always the new girl, new girl. God help the new girl, new girl.
That's New Girl from Jamie Drake on 88.5 FM. It's the title cut from the new album, New Girl. And this album, to me, you heard the bossa nova sound of that. It is a Saab 900. This album is a corduroy jacket with leather elbow patches. It is so mid-century, you know, feeling, and you hear the 70s vibe in it. Where did that come from? Is that just an aesthetic that you've always liked, or is it just something that organically came around?
I would say both. I mean, I've always, my favorite era of music has always been the 70s, and some of my biggest musical heroes lived in Laurel Canyon. Joni Mitchell, obviously. Jackson Browne,
Neil Young, you mentioned before.
Yeah, and then also, like, you know, like I've been influenced by like Joan Baez, and so like that whole folk era is like, it's always an era that I felt like, man, I really kind of wish I would have lived during that time period and gotten to make music then, because it just feels like such a pure time where people had figured things out enough to where with writing. I mean, songwriters, that was still a new thing to be your own, writing your own song and telling your own story. And the way people were recording things just felt like it was more of an authentic experience, too. It was like, we're discovering our own voices and our own stories. We're writing about them, and then we're recording them in a way that's just, here it is. And getting creative with it, certainly, but there's just such a purity to that time period that I've always related to, and I've always wanted to make a record that I could say, you know, felt like it was made in that time period or something. Because I've always felt like I was born in 79, okay? So I can say I'm from the 70s.
Yeah, you made it.
I just made it
just
in
under
there.
The wire.
Yeah. And So thank you for saying all of that, because it feels good to hear that comes through.
You know? Yeah, I'm stoked that you're putting it out on vinyl. And once again, you can go to jamiedrakemusic.com and pre-order the vinyl version of it. But it's just one of those that, you know, I can totally see that in your den, on the credenza, on the turntable.
And for the campaign, I don't know when this is airing, but there's only 9 days left to get one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so rush. you mentioned what did I say from the beginning when you came in today, you, and this is a presumptuous thing to say perhaps, but you seem like lighter, just, you know, you seem unencumbered.
Oh,
compared
thank
to
you.
Last time I saw you, well, it was a kiss. we were in, you know, the early pits of COVID hell, but it seems like you are in a much happier place right now.
I am. Thank you. That's amazing that you would notice that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. For me, the pandemic was such a cleansing experience. I know that there was a lot of bad stuff, obviously. Like, I felt like I'd spent so much time working up to a certain point in my career, and then I put my record out in September of 2019, and then I had all my tours canceled like every other musician, and and it was like, what the heck just happened, you know? But intuitively going into myself and really working on myself, it was with the ACA, and ACA taught me to listen to my intuition, because I had spent so much of my life being in my head. Mm-hmm. I think, like, from all the traits that I grew up with, living in my head too much and trying to control life from your brain, it just doesn't work, you know? And so, I feel much more, like, unencumbered, and like I've healed from a lot of things, and that I can actually, a lot of things have been like taken off of me, and I know how to hear what's right for me now, and I know how to listen to my intuition and to be open to life having really good things to offer. So
good.
Yeah.
Well, we want good things for you. You're different than a lot of artists. You're unique, and everybody here at the station's a fan, and we want you to get the recognition you deserve. And this new album's a good step in that direction. You're going to do another song for us. This is It's a New Life. How would you set that up?
Well, It's a New Life. I had this experience in Ojai where I healed so much, and then my next travel took me to North Carolina, because my roommate in Ojai, after those 9 months, she asked me to move out because the cases were getting higher again. It was the end of 2020. She asked me to move out. And so I had someone renting my place still. So I said, okay, I guess I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to drive across the country and go see my family in North Carolina. Wow. So that's what I did. And I went on a family tour. And during that experience, I ended up living with one of my closest childhood friends and her husband. They have a huge house in Chapel Hill, and they were just like, just stay with us until things get a little bit more normal. You know, we love you. And I was like, okay, that sounds great. And so during that time, I continued this inner journey. But I was like, my inner child was physically taking me to different places and relationships and people where I had spent different times in my life as a child, you know, at this age or that age. And I got to take my inner child by the hand and go on this journey with her and kind of relive different experiences with people. But from the perspective of, I get to be the inner loving parent now to you, little girl. And we get to like reintegrate and reimagine what life can be now that I can, it helped me resolve things basically.
Yeah.
And so that was like a really incredible experience. I even reconnected with my first boyfriend ever from like high school, and we had a lot of things we needed to resolve, so that was interesting. And so It's a New Life ended up happening when the world opened up a little bit again, and I came back to Los Angeles that May and June of 2021. And while I was in LA, my good buddy Justin Tam from Nashville randomly texted me and said, hey, do you know Rich Jax? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, if you're going to be in LA for a while, you should write with him. And I was like, okay. So he set us up over email. And by the time we finally worked out meeting each other, he was staying in, I think, Goleta or Montecito area or something in his friend's place there. And so when I met Rich, it was interesting to find out that we both had been experiencing similar pandemic experiences, just with being a bit nomadic and like following our intuition, listening to our gut more, because I feel like this has been such a time of information where we've been inundated with so much information. And what I found for myself is that I really just needed to listen to my intuition, because it's usually right. And I can't listen to the news. I can't. Yeah. I just can't. And so it was nice to discover that we were on the same page with that. And I was sharing with him how I was like, yeah, I don't know who I'm going to work with next as a producer, because, you know, it took like 8 years for me to, you know, trust my last producer. Like, we developed everything together. Everything's fine. It was a result of years and years and years of that. And I had trust issues. And so that took forever to make that record. And I was like, I know I have to work with someone else. I don't know who it is, because that took forever, but I know it'll happen at the right time. And then he shared his story a little bit, and come to find out, he wasn't just a songwriter. He was also a Grammy Award winning producer.
How handy.
I know. And I was like, oh, I feel a little bit silly. I Jamie Draked my way into this meeting. I didn't do any research. And so that worked out. So I was like, oh, I felt a little bit like, oh my gosh, I didn't look you up. I'm sorry. But he's wasn't offended in any way whatsoever. So then we went and we started writing a song, and it just immediately, he had been playing with these Chet Baker chords and stuff, and just things came out just like, it was just like, boom, this whole beautiful song was written really quickly. And for me, yes, the first verse is stepping out of my skin, don't know how to begin. Don't know. It's like I can't remember the lyrics unless I sing them.
Let's have you sing them.
I'll definitely do that in a second. Stepping out of my skin, don't know how to begin. Packing up my room, leaving my cocoon. And it was like I was lyrically synthesizing this experience I was having of leaving my apartment, not knowing what was going to come next, knowing that I needed to listen to my intuition, but that it was also kind of uprooting me in so many ways, and kind of in the same way, not re-traumatizing me in the sense that I'm like going all over the place and feeling unstable like the way I did when I was a kid, but learning that home is within me, and it's a new life and it's all mine for me. Means like all of this healing that I got to do, and that I got to discover that it's a new life and it's all mine. It's like my life belongs to me. And I grew up in an environment where my life had been taken from me in so many ways. My childhood, my youth, my so many things I don't have to really go into. And so it's like, now I was literally in this place where I just felt free from all of that. And I was like, my life belongs to me, and it's a new life and it's all mine. I'm in love when I say goodbye. And for me, that means like I get to actually rest in the energy of love now when I say goodbye to this old paradigm. When I say goodbye to, I don't have to say goodbye to my old self. I can integrate her back into my life and be like, it's okay. You can sit in the baby seat. You don't have to like drive the car. Like, I got us, you know?
Nice.
And so that's basically like the story of It's a New Life. And it had this bossa nova kind of vibe to it. And it was just like this, all of a sudden, like this mind-blowing experience for me where I was like, 2 hours earlier, I was literally saying, yeah, I don't know who I'm going to work with next. And then we wrote this song and he was like producing it and I sang it. And we were both just looking at each other like, oh my God, like we have to make a record together.
That's great. I like how you turned yourself into a verb there. She's going to Jamie Drake this for you. This is It's a New Life on 88.5 FM.
Stepping out of my skin, don't know how to packing up my room, leaving my cocoon, feelings come, feelings go. It's all mine. I'm in love when I say goodbye. I'm in love when I say goodbye. Holding close every tear gets me through every year. Say hello once again and begin where I end. It's a new life and it's all mine. Say goodbye. I'm in love when I say goodbye. But it always makes me cry. It always makes me cry. It's a breaking heart. It's a tear. It's a fear. It's a walk in the park, ain't this first time. It's a death, it's a start, it's a breaking heart. It's a tear, it's a fear of a brand new year. It's a smile in the dark, it's a child born. It's a at and at and at all. Feelings come, feelings go.
It's a New Life from Jamie Drake on 88.5 FM, live in the studio here for this live in the studio. First one for me in quite some time, and I'm glad it's with you, Jamie. Talking about something that you brought up a little bit ago, and you talked about your childhood and healing and you know, parlaying everything into its proper places. And I don't want to prosecute all of that stuff again necessarily, but... it was interesting. I was just reading not long ago that your dad was a tunesmith. He was a songwriter. Mm-hmm. And that you also grew up in a Pentecostal you know, church. Mm-hmm. It sounds to me, you know, from the cheap seats, like that you were exposed to a dramatic environment, you know, a performance environment from a very young age. When you look back on those circumstances, is it kind of inevitable that you became a performer yourself?
I mean, yeah, I think that makes sense, yeah. I mean, my dad was, he wrote songs and he played them at home, and my brother and I would, I remember singing harmonies with him and stuff when we were little. But he wasn't really pursuing it in this way where it's like I'm, you know, living my dreams and stuff. He'd have his friends over and they'd drink a bunch and play music. And then the church stuff, it did music at, actually music at church was my, it was like my favorite part of it, because it just made me feel like I was being enraptured in this really just beautiful, safe world. And music always touched me so deeply as a kid. But yeah, I mean, I suppose it makes sense, yeah. But my dad passed away. We didn't have much of a relationship, and he passed away when I was like in my early 20s. So I think by the time I did start pursuing music, I was 29. And it's almost like I had this torch that I was carrying. I was like, I'm going to do what my dad didn't do. You know, part of me felt like I wanted him to be proud of me. And I also just had it within me because, like, I was his daughter, you know.
Right. I also, I mean, it's not funny, but it looking back on it, it almost seems like it's, you know, a dark comedy. You learn to play piano a little bit as a kid, and then you move one time, and the piano falls out on the sidewalk and is smithereens.
Yep.
No wonder with these roadblocks why it took you your own time and your own schedule to you know, make music on your terms when you were ready to do it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's so crazy when I think of all the roadblocks. I mean, it's wild that you remember the piano story, but yeah, that was like the worst day of my life in the eighth grade. It's always been in me, and there's this fighter in me that's like, and it took being married in my 20s to the wrong person for that whole decade almost, getting a divorce, and then realizing like that was the catalyst for me to pursue music, because I wasn't really able to do it in that marriage. I wasn't really able to be myself. And so I came out of that and I was like, I'm doing music no matter what. And that's why I'm still doing it, even after a pandemic, because I have the knowledge of knowing that if I'm not doing it, I'm not in line with who I really am here and what I'm supposed to be doing. Yeah. You know, like it's my purpose. It's a little bit scary, because it's like, okay, can I keep doing this, you know? But it's sort of my only plan.
Well, what a badge of honor. If you can make it through all of those things, make it through a pandemic, and still be an artist at the end of all of that, then you've earned the right, you know, to have that be your road for as long as you want it. The new album is called New Girl. It's out now. Go buy it. It's a really lovely record. And see if you can get your hands on one of those vinyl. They're probably gone by the time you see this, but maybe you can find one on eBay. I'll put some out on eBay. Thank you so much for coming by and spending time with us, Jamie. She's going to play us out with one more song. And for me, this is the 70s, you know, song on here. The vibe on this with the electric piano, it's just, it's drenched in that 70s vibe. How did this one come together?
Man, so I wrote It's a New Life with Rich in May, and then by the time, and then we were like, okay, when we're going to make the record's going to happen at some point in the fall probably. And I was still kind of traveling around and figuring things out, and do I want to be in LA? Do I want to be in North Carolina? Like, where do I want to be? And then I was going to spend the whole month of October in Nashville, because I had been thinking, oh, I feel kind of drawn to Nashville. Maybe I should start a new chapter there, you know? Like, so I rented my apartment out and I was going to stay with some friends there in Nashville for that entire month. Well, lo and behold, we were planning on making the record in December. And Rich calls me and he's like, hey, what do you say we do this in October? And I was like, okay, yeah, we could do that. I'm going to be in Nashville for the whole month, but we could do this anywhere because you're nomadic, I'm nomadic. We can do what we want. And then I was like, maybe I could fly Austin out to Nashville and then we can make the record in Nashville. So he's like, okay, send me your demos for the album and I will discuss things. And so I sent him the demos. And the next week he was like, hey, how's it going? He's like this really nice guy, but he's really good at like figuring out how to get what he wants. Sorry, Rich. And he's like, I've been listening to your demos and you know what? They don't sound like Nashville. They sound like California. And I was like, well, that makes sense because I wrote them in California, you know?
Sure.
Because like this record is basically like 1970s Laurel Canyon meets Rio de Janeiro. And so so I was like, okay, well, let's make this record in California then. And I just said yes. I've gotten used to just saying yes when it feels right. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know how this is going to work out, but it's going to work out somehow. So I texted Austin and I was like, hey, you want to be on this album? It looks like we're going to make it here in October. And he's like, yeah, I'd love to. And then I was like, the only thing is Rich and I both need a place to live because we're nomadic and we also need – so we're kind of looking for a place to record and also stay at the same time. And Austin was like, oh, wow, that's really crazy, actually, because my friend Dana just told me yesterday that he's trying to get musicians in to record at his house in Malibu Canyon.
Oh, all right.
Because he just has an extra house laying around that's kind of this fun thing
for
him.
People around here have those, yes.
And he's like, he's an art collector and a big music fan and a really good friend of Austin's. And I was like, wow, that sounds like it could be perfect, actually. Could you find out how much he would charge for us to use the space? And he gets back to me a couple days later and he says, hey, looks like we can be there, but we can only be there on these dates, which basically amounted to 2 weeks. And the rest of the time he has photo shoots and stuff. And he's like, but yeah, he said he doesn't want to charge you. And I was like, okay, that works for my budget. Yeah, right. And I was like, I don't want to really believe that this is really true until I was like, could we do a scouting thing, like a scouting day? I'd love to meet him and just from my own sense of like, I want to make sure this is real.
Right.
You know, so we go there, I meet Dana, the property is like just gorgeous, houses. Everything's gorgeous. I mean, he like designed the whole, he builds homes. He does the design stuff on the inside. He collects really expensive art stuff.
He's just an old fashioned patron of the arts.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And so what ended up happening is that totally came together. We made the album in Malibu Canyon in this beautiful home for free. And Austin and Rich and I got to live there for 2 weeks in nature with deer running around the property. And I got to have my little dog with me. I slept in a king size bed. It was just like, I felt like I was been given this like incredible gift. And I've totally gone off topic, I think, here, but you had asked about Easy Target. And so leading up to that, I did go to Nashville. I wrote Lifted by Love, which is on the album with my friend Justin Tam and Rich. And then I had my first co-write with Caroline Spence, who's a Nashville songwriter there. And we've known each other for years and years, but not very well. And we've never written together. So for me, it was this really cool experience of writing with the first female songwriter that I've written with, who I felt like we work really similarly. And I happen to be more of a melodic top liner, and she's just a little bit more, you know, gifted with the lyrics coming quicker. And so it just made for this song. We wrote this song together, and I was like, whoa, this is a really good song. I'm putting it on my record, you know? Like, yeah. So, and Easy Target, we wrote it, we were just writing about a relationship. We were writing about, and we weren't really sure how, what angle to take it from. And then the closer and closer we got to the angle, because for me, I always have to write something that I relate to. I'm not one of those writers that can like write about from someone else's perspective so much. It's like, it has to be true to my life. Otherwise I feel like a liar or something. And so I was just like, you know, Have I been an easy target? Didn't I try my hardest? How did you find out where my heart is? Did I make it easy? Like, I've been in all of these relationships because of my childhood stuff and because, like, I attracted a lot of people that just kind of saw me as an easy target to, like, get whatever they wanted out of me. And that's what that song is about, but it's sung in this really, like, fun way.
Light and breezy, you know? Way. And I love the lines, too, and I took it as a slap in the face to, you know, a patriarchal society where, what was the line? Talking over me and I know where that leads.
Yes.
You know, that the beginning, sowing the seeds of a bad relationship. Mm-hmm. What do they say? When you go on a date, someone will tell you everything you need to know about them in the first half hour if you're willing to listen. And, you know, it just sounds, you know, like someone who's been down those roads. Well, I'll tell you what, instead of talking about the art, we're going to let you perform it. You were given that big gift, you said, in Malibu Canyon. She's going to share the gift with you here and play us out with Easy Target from the new album, New Girl. This has been great. 88.5 live in studio with Jamie Drake. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Time to wake up before history repeats, before love aims its arrow straight at me, making me believe now I know where that leads. Have I been an easy target? Didn't I try my hardest? How did you find out where my heart is? Did I make it easy? It's easy to fall for the forest, not the trees. When you call and it feels like chivalry, it's you talking over me. Now I know where that leads. Have I been an easy target? Didn't I try my hardest? How did you find out where my heart is? Did I make it easy? Have I been an easy target? Didn't I try my hardest? How did you find out where my heart is? Did I make it easy?
If you subscribe to this channel on YouTube, you will get all of 88.5 FM's live content. If you subscribe to this radio station, then you can get some fine swag like this, the Volume 2 Studio Sessions, and it's available now at 88.5fm.org for your donation. And thank you.